Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
There are thousands of working dogs all over the U.S. and beyond with incredible abilities. They can find missing people, detect drugs and bombs, pinpoint unmarked graves of Civil War soldiers, even find drowning victims more than 200 feet below the surface of a lake. These abilities may seem mysterious or even magical, but Cat Warren shows the science and the rigorous training and the skilled handling that underlie these creatures' amazing abilities. Cat Warren is a university professor and journalist who had tried everything she could think of to harness her dog Solo's boundless energy and enthusiasm until a behavior coach suggested that she try training Solo to be a working dog. What started out as a hobby soon became a calling, and as Warren was introduced to the hidden universe of dogs who do this essential work and the handlers who ultimately train them, her new book is What the Dog Knows: Scent, Science, and the Amazing Ways Dogs Perceive the World. The book is just out in paperback from Touchstone, and we welcome Cat Warren to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Joe. I'm really appreciative of your having me.
Very nice to have you back on the program. We talked when this book was out in hardcover, and it's now out in paperback. You're a professor at the North Carolina State University. You teach journalism there and creative nonfiction. This certainly is creative in the sense that you say, okay, I'm going to do this with my dog Solo, and then it just kind of launches you into this whole world that we find out in reading the book that you really had no idea existed.
It is, and it's one of those, you know, how desperation sometimes ends up being the most serendipitous of feelings, right, where it shoots you off into another direction that you could never have imagined, and that's really what happened with this pup, and I'm entirely grateful to him. I wasn't at the time, you know, we were just trying to find a solution that would make him into a better dog around the house, to tell you the truth, and instead, he kind of launched me out into this new world that I hadn't known existed.
When it comes to the actual abilities that the dogs possess that make this possible, what do we know about what that is, number one? And number two, is it something that is just innate in the canine breed, or is there a specific breed or breeds that certainly this comes out in?
Well, I mean, I think there's a long, complicated answer to that, and the short one is that we're still learning and really learning to understand what it is that dogs and even people can do. There are articles coming out on the capacity of people to detect various scents, right? And there's so much, I mean, the sort of olfactory science is burgeoning with this. What we do know, of course, is that dogs have very, very good noses. And because they've co-evolved with us, they are probably the animal that overall is just the best companion to have side by side if you're going to do scent detection work. That said, I have seen so many different breeds do this work, everything from little terriers up through, you know, Belgian Malinois Shepherds, Labradors, Golden Retrievers, Australian Shepherds. I've seen pit bull mixes that have done this work. What they all have in common are two things. They all have noses, and all those noses are pretty good, right? There's more sort of distinction between the same breed from dog to dog than there is necessarily across breeds, right? So
yeah,
you can't say the bloodhound has the best nose. And you need a dog that wants to work. And once you have that combination, that's the beginning of being golden.
Does, and things such as, so breed does enter into it a bit. Does the sex of the dog make a difference?
I don't think so. I don't think there's any good evidence that shows that. It is certainly true that in our world we like to stare at dogs and take our gender expectations and plop them on top of the dog. We do that all the time. And certainly I think that in law enforcement there tends to be a little bit of a prejudice towards male dogs. There's not great scientific evidence at all that there's any difference. And certainly for scent detection, there's no discernible difference. Right. Yeah. I would say that for some law enforcement people that having patrol dogs, there's an attitude that a big macho male patrol dog is going to be a better fit. And I think that some of that is just practice, right? It's what we're used to doing or seeing.
Sure. For you, what were you able to do? One of the things that I read in the introduction is that you were ultimately looking for a way to harness Solo's energy. And this was a dog that was, you know, just like, hey, I'm a dog and I'm ready to go do something. So you harness all of that and you say, okay, I'm going to give this dog a task. And it's a task that the dog takes very, very seriously. How hard is that adjustment, that harnessing, that focusing? How hard is that to achieve?
You know, Joe, I think it depends from dog to dog. Of course, I was a relatively new handler and new to this world. So for me, just learning about it, I was very awkward. Solo, in retrospect, this is always in retrospect, was an enormously easy dog to train. He had everything he needed, right? He wanted to work. He had lots of energy. He had a good nose. He loved playing toy-obsessed games,
yeah.
And putting those things together, right, make a good search dog. And I think that what the difficulty is that, as usual, people tend to be the weak link in these dog handler pairings. And I think that Solo is one of those dogs who made me look good. Right. People would admire, right? People would admire his technique. I didn't see a ton of people going, oh my God, she's a great handler. But certainly people would look at Solo and go, wow, you can really read that dog. So, you know, he made me look good. In the future, I'd like to become a good enough handler that occasionally somebody would say, hey, nice work, Cat.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I found fascinating about the book, because ultimately Solo works primarily as a cadaver dog, is that correct?
That's right. And I actually, Joe, it's hard to believe, I retired him last year at the age of 10.
Yeah.
He's still healthy and kicking, and I train him, but I have a new dog I'm bringing along now.
And so would, in his prime, would Solo have been able to be... A drug dog? Would he have been able to be a bomb detecting dog? In other words, is it a specific skill that Solo possessed that made him a good cadaver dog, or does the working dog philosophy overrule and would make whatever avenue you decided to go down possible just because the dog wanted to work and do something and just needed the training?
Absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right, Joe. The thing is that once you have a dog that likes the job of being a sniffer dog, training them on different kinds of scents is not a problem. The fact is I'm not law enforcement, and the drug wars don't especially interest me, so I wouldn't have made him into a drug detection dog. But one of the things people are doing that I think is fascinating, and especially when it's done right, is conservation dog work, where people are out looking for endangered species, sometimes invasive species, using their dogs to do that work. And interestingly, I was very amused that one night I was training Solo with the cops, and one of them was looking at Solo and turned to me and said, you know, that dog would really like to do bite work. i.e. become a law enforcement patrol dog who would occasionally take a chomp out of a criminal to hold him. And I said, no, we're not going there.
Yeah.
But again, you see that once you've got that package, it's kind of a versatile one.
And the work that they do is really, and this is what I found fascinating about the book, is that the work that they do, it's really hard to replicate that by anything, using anything else. In other words, you know, you don't get a machine and plug it in and have them do the work that the dog is doing.
You know, I think that is generally absolutely true. There's also the thing, though, where if I think about some of the more complicated cases that people have done or that I have done, the term "it takes a village," I know it's a cliche, comes to mind, where you actually, for instance, in clandestine burials, a dog is really important to help narrow the area where somebody might have been, say, buried in a shallow grave. But you also need other tools, right? So ground-penetrating radar, you know, even hydrologists who know where the water table might be going in that area to help predict that. And, of course, the investigators who, with their information, have gotten you into the area where the dog might be able to get close enough to help pinpoint where that person is buried. And it's true that I believe, and so far the studies have shown, that machines are not replacing the dog's nose for things like bomb detection. Who knows what will happen in the future? I mean, I'm not sanguine that the dog's nose will always and forever be the best quote-unquote instrument, but for the time being, it's the best all-around instrument that we've found.
And that can be that can be extrapolated to, again, the bomb sniffing dogs, the drug dogs, the lake dogs, and beyond.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, and you know, let's face it. I mean, they're a lot more fun to work with than machines. And you know, people talk sort of you know, with a little scorn about dogs as opposed to machines and their ability to go on and on. But the fact is that machines can be hard to operate. They break down. It can be hard to get them into the areas that you can get a dog into. All of these things make it so that, in principle, you've got a machine in a lab that works like gangbusters, and the moment you take it out into the field, everything goes haywire with it. A dog doesn't.
No, and you know, I have a nose dog. I have a yellow lab, a beautiful yellow lab, 3 years old, and this is a dog that I go out with walks on frequently, and it will just have his nose to the ground and find whatever, you know, usually something disgusting to roll in. So which is fine. That's what they do, and that's okay. The thing that I this is going to sound like it's kind of an offhanded you know, snarky question, but I really mean it to be I mean it as a serious question, which is there is a way, because I can't imagine my dog, no matter how well trained he is or could further training he could have, that if it came between finding, you know, working and somebody pulling out a burger, then that he's gone. You know, they're like, he is as loyal to me as could be. But if somebody comes up, you know, with a Big Mac, all bets are off.
It's very funny that people scornfully talk about, and I'm just going to say this, they talk about food-obsessed labs.
Yeah.
And it's really true that dogs who are food-obsessed can be a little bit harder to train. But the fact is that one of the ways they have to cross-train toy-obsessed German Shepherds is I've seen cops put a whole, like, several bags full of tennis balls into a room that also has drugs. And the German Shepherd will go in the room and go, "Oh my God, this is heaven," right? And forget all about the drug search, right?
Yeah.
Because there's 200 tennis balls.
Sure,
there, right?
A lot more fun.
So, That's a lot more fun. So you have to, with any dog, you actually have to make sure that you're giving them a reward that has higher value than the person with the McDonald's burger who's standing a few feet away. And you can imagine how food on a search, if you've got a dog that is incredibly food-driven, that the dog has to be able to ignore that food.
Right.
Right.
And be able to do.
As it is.
Sure.
Yeah.
The name of the book is What the Dog Knows, Scent, Science, and the Amazing Ways Dogs Perceive the World. It's a fascinating read. The book is now out in paperback from Touchstone. Kat Warren, a great pleasure to have you back on the program. Thank you very much for your great work and for sharing it with us this morning.
Oh, thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be on.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Again, Kat Warren's new book, What the Dog Knows. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.